You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 548 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, today joined by Mr. Fosma Moon, Seth Miller, and special guest Michael Traeger of TravelZork.com and TravelZork.travel. Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Awesome. Welcome back. It's been a while. I don't want to try to remember when the last time we had you on was, but a little embarrassing for us, but good to have you again.
It should not be embarrassing at all, but 548.
And, you know, I was thinking about it, Michael, we've had you on, like, I remember we came to your house in London, and that was pre-COVID. That's how long that's been. I know. It's wild.
That was sort of cool. Yeah, I know.
I forgot that we all went there. I know I had been. I stopped by Michael's house to do laundry once.
Yeah, we recorded an episode there with him.
That's the true sign of friendship and also like living in you're not the only one who stopped by to do laundry. I mean, that's like the best, like, you know, people who are on extended trips. That's great about living overseas. It's like, yeah, you can do laundry. Of course, the laundry machine is super small and washes and dries, and your one load of laundry might take 12 hours. But so if you have a lot of time.
Listen, this was, you know, I think 15 days into a 3-week trip and getting clean underwear and socks out of it was all I washed, but that was a glorious moment.
Well, I am glad I could provide that essential service.
Foz and I are back from our Sydney, Johannesburg rigmarole. Foz, are you recovered?
I'm recovered mostly.
Mostly. Okay. Did you end up overnighting in Toronto?
I did.
Yeah. You went. How was Emirates First?
Emirates First is very nice. If I had to do it again, I would do it the other way to not have a morning flight.
Christchurch to Sydney in the afternoon.
Yes, because Sydney to Christchurch leaves at like 7 something in the morning.
Yeah.
Which is rough to begin with. And then like we were delayed and what have you. But by the time you get into Christchurch, I think by the time I get to my hotel and everything, it was like 5 o'clock.
Oh, wow. And you had your
hour or two crossing, right?
Two hours and then just. Getting through customs and everything was always an adventure. Apparently, they in the winter, they're not really used to people showing up for a day. So that made things interesting.
Yeah. I just threw in our notes. One of our listeners came up, by the way. If you next time you guys are, you know, gallivanting across Australia, there's a new or not new. There's a Virgin Australia milk run.
Oh.
8 stops.
Oh, we missed out.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd call that missing out.
I think so.
Sorry, 7 stops to get from... It's on Rex, not Virgin Australia, sorry. Brisbane to Mount Isa, and they got to get back, I suppose, via Toowoomba Well Camp, Charleville, Quilpie.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Windora, Birdsville, Bidori, Boolia, and then you end up at Mount Isa. You leave Brisbane at 8 in the morning, and you finish at 5:15 in the evening. And then you got to get home.
I think... did you look like one of the layover? Like most of these are like 15-minute connections.
Yes, I don't know how they do that. Oh, I do know how they do it. It's not a sob.
Yeah, it's not a sob. It's like 10 people on the plane,
and they don't actually have to open. Like the cargo bin is like they push you out of the way, throw a bag under your seat, and get out of there.
I think the question I would have is, since it's on Rex, if you buy it today, will they still be running when you are supposed to fly it?
Oh, Foz, that's just. I think they are. I mean, do they have the essential air service in the?
I mean, they shut down a lot of the operations earlier this year, right?
Yeah, true.
They shut down got rid of the jets, but I think they were keeping the props.
Yeah, but like even when they got rid of the jets, that was unexpected. It happened very fast.
Did you, Foz, did you get your shower? I guess that's the important question.
Of course.
How was it on the A380?
It's an experience. I mean, it's nothing to go crazy for other than the experience, but I mean, it's a novelty thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Michael, have you done that Emirates First yet?
I have not. And
boo.
Boo. I'm not that interested. That's, I mean, I'm like tangentially interested.
You would pick it up on a route like this. You're not going to go out of your way to fly it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. You know, along the lines of what you were saying, what's the longest trip you've ever taken? That's a like a long haul flight where you went in for 24 hours and then flew home.
Oh, I mean, Foz and I have done. Foz, I have done L.A. Singapore with the turn the next day, and that's, I don't even know, what is that, 18 hours, Foz, of flying?
No, it's more, right? It's like, what, 16 hours, 16 and a half hours to Singapore and then 14 back. Yeah, 14 back.
I mean, the producer and I did Newark, Singapore way back in the day when they accidentally opened up awards based on the 345. I think we had a day in Singapore and then I kept going west and came home via Bangkok to Rome to Geneva or Zurich. I don't remember which, to Newark, which was another very long day. But yeah, I've done 24 hours or 36 hours in Tokyo, I think. Like,
I mean, I think for Steve and I, it would probably be the Joburg trip in September.
They didn't get Joburg on?
Like when we never made it to Joburg.
That's true. Because we just literally spent the night in Cape Town and got on the next flight out. Yeah.
Yeah, that to me is always impressive and crazy. I've only done, the most I've ever done is like flew into London for a cocktail party from Charlotte and then flew home the next day. That's
still not easy on your body.
Yeah. In some ways it's easier because you just never try to adjust, but it's still not easy.
Yes.
My favorite of those is I did a KLM flew me when they got their 787s. They did before they put them into service, they did three just like tour flights around the Netherlands, went up for an hour and landed. So they did three flights for 200 seats on it each. They sold it to the public. It was actually a really big deal. It was a lot of people had a lot of fun there, but they flew me out for it. And so I took the early flight from, this is actually going to come back to Michael in a second here. I took the early flight from JFK to Amsterdam, landed at like 8 in the morning. The first flight was supposed to go up at like 8:30 and they didn't think I'd get there on time for that. So they put me on the second one, whatever. I got to the gate. I was hanging out, doing the whole thing. I did my flight, got off the plane, went into town. Is when Michael was living in Amsterdam. We met up at the Hilton Garden Inn bar or whatever. We had jugs of gin. It's like right next to the train station downtown. And then I looked down and I was like, oh shit, gotta go. It's like an hour 15 to departure. Bolted to the train station, hopped on the train. Maybe it was 90 minutes to departure, but like did not stop walking off the train straight into my seat. And was on the late flight from Amsterdam back to JFK that night.
That's impressive. Great. I love that.
The flight attendants got worried about me. I fell asleep so hard after the main course. They're like, yeah, we tried to bring you your dessert and we couldn't wake you up.
But think how liberating it is when you're traveling that light too. That's like the best feeling when you just have a small backpack and you're just traveling and you're not tied to anything. My favorite was when Northwest was running, when I lived in Cincinnati, Northwest had like $99 round trips to Vegas. And it's just early in the time where I got involved, started in gambling. And I did something where I dropped the kids off at school and I took a flight in the afternoon. It must have been, I think it was like CVG to Detroit to Las Vegas, got into Vegas at like 4, went directly to Stardust, literally played Baccarat the entire time with a quick break for dinner. And then I was on the 1:10 a.m. flight. So I got in at 4, 1:10 a.m. flight that was through Minneapolis. So the Vegas to Minneapolis back to CVG. But the best part of it is that's when I first became friendly with one of the pit bosses there. And I had gone on a streak and I was running really late to the airport. And I said, can you give me a car to the airport? And they didn't have it. So she had the guy, one of the security guys, drive me in the Stardust security van to the airport. Which I wish I had social, like that was like the best part.
You know, like security van, could they have just pulled up to one of the gates and been like honked it open up and driven you to the plane instead of having to actually go through security?
That would have been awesome.
But I'll never forget that. And I got on that flight and that was when I was like working up status on Northwest and the upgrade actually cleared and I was like in row one and I just fell as sound asleep as a human could ever fall asleep on a relatively short flight to Minneapolis. But that's one of my fondest memories of a short, you know, of a short trip. Mm-hmm. It's a purpose, of course.
Of course. Of course. So coming back, I'll make this short. Coming back from Sydney, I did Qantas first to DFW, which was an experience. The flight was great. Food was good. Plane, it was old, beat up, but it was fine. But checking in, speaking about traveling light, Michael, I had two bags. I had, Foz and I had bought duffel bags because we had purchased a lot of Tim Tams. I needed to fit all this stuff into a different bag. And so I put my backpack into a duffel bag, put the Tim Tams in there, had it all situated. Get to the first class check-in at Sydney, and a gentleman walks over with Qantas gear on, and he looks at me and he goes, yeah, you're going to have to check one of those. And I was like, okay. I'll wait till I'm checking in. Okay. But then he intentionally moves me out of the first class line to the business class line and tells the woman to check a bag. That's what he says to her. Make sure he checks a bag. And I'm like, all right, dude. So she's very rude and says, put them both on the scale. And I was like, why both? Like, why not one at a time? And she said, put them both on the scale. And it's overweight. It's like 24 kilograms together. And she says, you're going to have to rearrange things and you need to get out of line and go do that. I'm like, I was brought over here for you to check. What do you want? Okay, I'll move. So I get out of line and start rearranging things. She's like, no, sir, you need to go sit over there and do that. And I'm like, all right, you know what?
Go back.
Screw this. I got back in the first class line. The first class agent opened, was finally available. I walk up with the two bags still ready to go. And he's like, oh, I see you're on the flight to DFW. You have any bags to check? And I like look down. He looks down. I go, no. And he goes, all right. He cans me my boarding passes. And I just walk off. I mean, they were very large bags, to be fair. But it was a very odd experience.
So you forgot about the part where the first agent didn't know about the flight changing.
Oh, yeah. She was like, the agent that was going to make me check the bag was like, what flight are you on? I said, I'm going to DFW. And she goes, well, you're late. And I was like, no, it doesn't leave until noon. And it was like 10 a.m., 9:30 even. And she's like, no, you're late. And she's like, types in it. She's like, oh, it doesn't leave until noon. I was like, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. Imagine that. So anyway, it was a fine experience. A380, good. 14 seats is a lot in first. Half of them were empty. Crew was really nice. Yeah, definitely would do it again.
And there's still no Wads Easel, but
like it's
ready. Blocks eastbound or only westbound on that flight?
I don't know. It was very full eastbound. So what was the other question?
No, I was going to let you just handle it like a gentleman. Like, it's the kind of situation where it's not ever worth arguing because you can tell that person you'll never win the argument with. So
yeah, I mean, she'd already won it.
I try to teach people that like, but on principle, I'm like, there is no principle. You're not going to win. So it doesn't matter. I mean, have you ever argued with someone who's illogical? You know, that's not, you're not going to win the argument. So just pivot. And figure out another solution.
Not, I did exactly what Seth was saying. Just get right back in line. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. We did have some feedback from Tony. Tony corrected us on the Alaska livery. I think Foz and I were a little delirious. But the Alaska livery, where they're going to make it like the Aurora Borealis, is only going to be on the long-haul fleet. And of that, I think it might only be on the 787s. So Tony was pointing that out to us, and I just wanted to bring that up. So,
which makes sense, right? Chester wouldn't be very well recognized outside the United or North America.
Very true. I mean, but why have two liveries though? That's my thing with it.
I would expect that over time we might see a further shift away from Chester.
Yeah, which will be, it'll be sad. It'll be like the tulip going away.
Was that sad?
Also, is Chester the tulip? Like, I think Saul Bass just rolled over in his grave, Stephen.
Let's talk about Air Canada. They're striking. This is
quite good.
The flight attendants are still striking. It is ongoing. It's causing a bit of a problem.
And it's getting vicious.
Yes.
So the flight attendant, there was obviously a dispute and whatnot. Flight attendants threatened to walk out. The airline locked them out. And then the strike started. And there's always a little bit of nuance in the timing on all of those things. But they, let's just say there's some mutually agreed, we're not going to be flying right now. And then in Canada, there is a process by which the government can go and get a court order that basically says your strike is illegal, go back to work. The court got that order, which forces binding arbitration or binding mediation. The flight attendant union has said they consider the order invalid and illegal for a variety of reasons, but among them, the minister who issued it used to be general counsel for Air Canada.
I mean,
like 20 years ago, but still, there's a little bit of a conflict there.
But is it a conflict after 20 years?
I don't know. How many shares did they get?
Well, what do you think about what the flight attendants are asking for as far as getting paid, you know, which I know this has come up before with so many airlines about. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they want to get paid before the door closes.
Right. You want to get paid during boarding. And so Delta was the first group to secure that. Interestingly, not unionized. They get half pay for the posted duration of the boarding. So if like your boarding starts 40 minutes before departure, they get half pay for that 40 minutes. Even if the flight is then further delayed, they don't, like, it stops and then it starts again when the door closes. And American, as I understand it, also has got that in their latest contract, with which they just approved. United did not approve their contract, and I don't know if it had it in it or not. I don't remember, but that is a big issue for sure. I'm of the opinion that at some point, yes, you should be paid for your work, and I respect that. Also, if that was in the contract from whenever, the hourly rate probably would have been lower. And so expecting to immediately go from zero to getting all of it, which, you know, right now they get half for the ones that get it, is probably a too big a jump to ask for. But yes, it would be nice to see them actually getting paid during that time. I think especially because, if I remember correctly, there's an issue with like helping people put bags in the overheads and things like that. Like if they're not actually on the clock or providing drinks in first class pre-departure and whatnot, like if you're not actually on the clock, there's some, and being paid, there's questions about like, are you covered by workers' comp and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Like if you were to get hurt during that time, are you actually covered? Yeah.
I know that that's been brought up as an issue. I don't know what the actual law is around it, but
So Air Canada was, the government, the Canadian government said, go back to work or go to jail and be fined, correct? Like that's what they've told the flight attendants.
More or less. And the president of the union has come back with a statement saying, if I go to jail, so be it.
So, I mean, they're in this for the long haul here.
They're potentially certainly pushing hard on it.
For Air Canada, is it only affecting mainline? It's not affecting any of their regional stuff, right?
Yeah. That's correct. Or Jazz and PAL are still flying.
Yeah, mainline and Rouge.
Mainline and Rouge. Okay.
Yep.
Rouge, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So. And
one other thing about it, I would say is for routes where there was overlap or opportunity to reroute, United was honoring the tickets.
They were just taking them over? Or you could call up and say, I had this Air Canada ticket, and they would...
Apparently, they were finding ways to honor as many of the Air Canada passenger tickets as they could. So if you're flying transatlantic via Canada, they would find a way to, if they had seats, they would reroute you and such.
Huh.
Joint venture for the win, right?
Joint venture for the win?
Absolutely. Because
does that make all the United flight attendants scabs?
Wow. Yeah, those are fighting words, Seth. Yeah.
Because endorsing these days has become such a ancient practice.
Yeah.
You know, except in rare situations. Like American will endorse to United, but they won't endorse to Delta.
So I'm guessing it's a United agent that can do this, and her name is B.
That's not true. I've had a couple get tickets pushed over from United over to American recently. But what I will say, and vice versa as well. But the thing with Delta is Delta wants a premium, so AA wasn't willing to pay to play that game.
Mm.
Yeah, Delta didn't want to give American a discounted interline rate, basically. Yeah, and Michael, just for those who don't know, Michael's term of endorse is sort of like endorsing a paper check, which also no one who's on this listening to this probably knows what that means, but it's making the other airline accept your ticket.
Yeah. And then what happened with Allegiant pilots?
So, some other fun union stuff. Pilot union has been fighting for a long time, trying to get a new contract. They've issued a no confidence vote in management, and it's not like that means anything other than they're still pissed and they're talking it up. But the best part is in one of the quotes that came out in the press release around it, they were mentioned that basically something to the effect of, and management hasn't, you know, you haven't seen management this bad since Frank Lorenzo.
Wow.
And I just, yeah, anytime Frank Lorenzo enters the chat, you know, you're going to have a good time.
But is Allegiant doing as bad as everybody else? I mean, they're still in a better spot than Spirit, right?
They're in a better spot than Spirit, but, and will get better over time. Actually, and speaking of, they just announced service to Atlantic City to try to push Spirit down a little more, although it'll take a few months to get there. Yeah, I know, Lumpa. Very excited. You can actually now fly Allegiant Fort Lauderdale to, or soon we'll be able to fly Allegiant from Fort Lauderdale to Atlantic City instead of having to take Spirit. Would you do that instead?
No, you know what? Spirit is from PBI to Atlantic City, though, which is far more convenient. Yeah. Well, they have. I believe they have.
Yeah.
You know what? I fly what's practical. I used to fly Spirit from Boston to ACY just because it was practical. And I just, you know, I'm not going to. It's done. And I've done the amazing American Airlines bus. remember when it first came out? And I've also done it boarding from the secure area. But I'm all about practical. I mean, like within a certain realm of practical, you know, and that's for short flights. That's one thing. But I still will argue that, especially from East Coast to Europe, I would rather take a nonstop in premium economy than have to connect through JFK to take a business class flight from JFK to London. If that's the only option, you know, like good example, when I was in Charlotte, you know, I don't care. I just, it's not a really long flight over the water. And I don't.
And then 2 extra hours from Charlotte versus from JFK makes a huge difference if you're going to try to sleep.
Yeah.
My parents are still in North Florida. They fly via Atlanta, and my dad always bitches when he has to connect via JFK or Boston to get the, you know, the good seats, or his uses 2-for-1 on Delta or whatever the reason is. And I was like, well, that way I got the better deal. I'm like, right, but you didn't get to sleep because of the 4-hour flight.
No, exactly. And then in which case would you rather have the slightly longer flight with no connection in premium economy than business? And I know what I'm saying.
You're selling it to us. I mean, I think we're all on board with what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel, you know, that's and not that my goal is for that to be the case, but I mean, but also there's, you know, you also have that beautiful point of like, it's sometimes nice to see the other classes of service. I know Seth takes that to an extreme sometimes, but I'm not at that extreme yet, but it is sometimes to say like, oh, so this is what economy class is.
Do that a decent amount. Anyway, back to Allegiant, the no confidence vote. They're really upset, but how bad are they doing? I think they're kind of going to be okay, but also, right, they finally wrote off and sold off now the Sunseeker Resort, and I think they spent like $800 million and got $200 million back for it or something like that. Like, they burned a ton of cash trying to make that happen.
And we'll talk a little bit about probably next episode about Alaska and their vacations package stuff that's going on there too, which is shaking things up. So,
how do you spend $800 million on building a resort?
Concrete, trying to make something not sink into the marsh and on western coast of Florida. I don't know. A hurricane blew through and knocked half, like one, it was only half built, and that screwed everything up.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
It was a very, very expensive.
I think we can call it a
huge. But yeah, it was a very expensive property. It was like 1,000 rooms or something. That was something insane with condos and like swimming pools and restaurants and all this stuff. I think they finally got to like 50% occupancy at one point.
It's like the thing in Nassau, Fuzz. It's like the Hyatt we stayed at.
You say the Hyatt, not Atlantis?
Yeah, well, I mean, it looked like Atlantis. The lady was in the van with Foz, and I was like, is this Atlantis? We're like, no, it's the Hyatt. She's like, it looks just like it.
You mean, you say the Bahamar?
Yeah, the Bahamar, yeah.
Yeah, they have 3 hotels. I mean, Bahamas is sort of interesting that way.
It's Vegas on an island, baby. That's what we were told.
Well, that's the way it used to be. I mean, before you had, when you only had gaming in out west, I mean, base, and then you had Atlantic City, you pretty much so had to go to the Caribbean to get you next. That's why in Puerto Rico was a huge gambling destination.
Let's go back. Let's do this historically correctly. Cuba was a massive gambling destination.
Exactly.
Tell me about Porter and their pilot.
So just keeping the union conversation alive, Porter's pilots have now selected ALPA as their union representation. So I think that is relatively new. So now they need to secure a contract and all that stuff, but it's happening.
And so they're striking soon. Is that what you're saying?
Usually it takes a little, you usually wait until you, well, they can't, they have to get a collective bargaining agreement first. You have to have an agreement before you can strike, I believe.
Anything's possible, Seth, if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
The Department of Justice has decided to side with the Department of Transportation on the Aeromexico Delta JV disentanglement, I guess we could call it.
Smackdown, disintegration, cancellation, unwinding.
Yeah, I mean, this is the death knell, right? The DOJ saying the Department of Transportation is right to kill it.
I mean,
could still go to litigation over it.
True.
Yeah, I wonder what that would look like if they tried to sue and if they'd get a, you know, an injunction to keep it running while waiting or not. It is really interesting to me to see, you know, reading through these filings, how many different times it's like, apparently, like, the DOT is 100% hung up on access to Mexico City Benito Juarez Airport. They don't, and the Mexican government is like, the new airport is outside of town, deal with it. And like, that's the one where the new Mexicana is running to, it's the one where all the cargo stuff is running. It's the one that was like an old military base.
Yep.
Right. They were building a new real airport and then cut it down. Like when the new president took over AMLO, right? He's like, never mind. And like just stopped construction onto something that was half done.
Yep.
And now is, and like, but we have this other airport that's 90% done. So we'll just open it up and it's not on transit. There's all sorts of challenges working around it. The U.S. government, and they said Mexico City is full and we're going to keep stripping back access to it. Except Delta and Aeromexico are keeping basically all their access and everybody else isn't. Mm. And the U.S. government has said that's unacceptable. No doubt prodded on by the other U.S. airlines. Interestingly, the brief from Delta and Aeromexico points out that, like, we gave up a bunch of slots at Mexico City Airport and no one used them, and they gave them all back. And then, which is true, but if you look at the, like, the flight times, when JetBlue was running it, it was like 1 a.m. arrivals and 3 a.m. departures or something like that. They were terrible flight times. They're just really, really nasty.
Yep.
So yes, those slots that they got sucked, and so they didn't want to use them. Couldn't make it work. And so that is part of it. But yeah, I think it's going to be real interesting to see. The filings all came out, I guess, middle of last week. So then there's another week for responses, and now the DOT gets to, you know, read through everything and put out a final ruling. And I think, Foz, you're probably right. If it put out the final ruling and says, nope, we agree that this is what it is, there's a chance that a lawsuit would be filed. Delta and Aeromexico's filing basically calls it capricious and arbitrary and all the fun words that you have to use in these briefs. But yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. But yes, the DOJ siding with the DOT and saying that without truly open skies access, it's hard to consider any of these joint ventures reasonable is bad. Delta and Aeromexico do point out that, like, Japan and the United States, there's joint ventures there, but there's not open access to Haneda. Heathrow getting new slots is almost impossible, although JetBlue did pull it off. And Lisbon is actually the other one they mentioned, which, Stephen, I know you'll appreciate. You love hating on Lisbon Airport.
It's awful. It's an awful. And I think everybody who's gone through there recently, they're having a strike too. So,
but I think the difference here, like, when looking at Heathrow, right, no one controls 50% of the slots. Right, British Airways comes close, I think, but they're just under 50%, if I remember correctly.
With the joint venture, they're over 50.
Right, but just as a single carrier. But how much does Mexicana or Aeromexico control at Mexico City? I'd venture a lot more than 50.
Yeah, I think it's like 60.
Seth would have to pull the numbers, but yeah, I think it's more.
Yeah,
I think at London Heathrow, BA has conveniently put themselves under 50%, probably, to win arguments.
I mean, do you count the Iberian dwelling slots that basically that are all controlled by the same company?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, hey, that's how Alaska's getting their slot.
Yeah.
Is that confirmed? Is that how they're getting it? The Iberia stuff?
Well, it's coming from IAG. We know that. They hinted at that.
Okay. Yeah.
We hinted at it. I don't think we know for sure, but.
Yeah. And then let's talk about, there's an article. It's called, Is Air Travel Getting Worse? And it's got a bunch of data in it. It's talking about commercial flights and prices and delays and cancellations and fatality accidents. It talks about a bunch of stuff. Their point, really, I mean, I think I can summarize it, is yes, long delays are becoming more common. It remains safe, but it's arguably getting worse. Airfare has become cheaper, but I think we could all agree that it's being subsidized by the credit cards. So what do you guys think?
I don't know if airfare has really gotten cheaper. Stagnate maybe, but I don't think it's gotten cheaper.
Okay. Do you think that's caused by the credit card?
Well, no, I think it's caused by the unbundling.
Mm.
Right? Like, when you go back 15 years, you bought a ticket. You got luggage, you got a seat assignment, you got food. Right?
Now,
those were all...
Now you're lucky.
Yeah. Now it's just like, keep pulling out your credit card so we can charge you more.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole positive, the article, though? Is air travel getting worse? Would you agree?
It sucks. It's awful.
Michael, what do you think?
But it all sucks equally.
Yeah, so, it doesn't matter who you're on.
The number one, especially on the retail side of travel, when people are trying to predict, you know, the airline that won't have a problem. I use my PBI example all the time. We have had more mishaps with JetBlue, Delta, and American that I think if you hit the wrong day, anything can happen. And I mean, like, all kinds of things, you know, diversions, pilots not showing up, mechanicals. I mean, it's one of those, you know, trying to guess what's going to be the better opportunity is tough. I mean, I think the hardest thing for people is just figuring out how to pivot and navigate the system these days, because the way capacity is, it's just really it's really tough. It's just like, you know, last night, my daughter was supposed to fly home. She was here for a week, from PBI, and Delta, you know, had an extended delay, which turned out to be over 4 hours. I never even checked what happened, which was going to get her into Boston well after 3 o'clock in the morning. And Delta has one flight at 7:15 PM from PBI to Boston. And it was that kind of situation where, and, you know, the PBI is so plagued because almost all these flights that turn at PBI for like Delta and American, they're all coming from the East Coast, right? A lot from like Boston and New York. So they just, they're plagued with so many delays, especially later in the day. But, you know, she didn't want to take a flight. I didn't want her to take the flight that late. So I immediately, you know, I immediately basically refunded that ticket, and it found an award ticket on American through Charlotte for today. And
yeah,
worked out that part. But it's just, you know, people, it's this quick thinking kind of thing. It's so hard. And it's, I feel really bad for people who don't fly often, because you need to make decisions really quickly and pivot. And it is a dilemma, you know, and it's one of the things that, you know, it's great for me to be able to do that, or you to be able to do that. But a lot of people, you know, that planning, like, what are you going to do if there's a problem, and having options. And especially, you know, when you have a situation where a flight gets canceled or delayed in like the Caribbean and you're on Spirit, yeah. You know, I mean, that's, you know, pivoting, you know, the way that we would pivot is a little bit different. But that's also the beauty of miles and points, because I would say over 50% of the time when we have to pivot to something, we just wind up using points, you know. And sure, maybe this ticket to Boston was 10,000 more miles than I wanted, but it got the job done, and I got the Delta flight refunded. So that's wonderful. But I do say your interesting thing about airfares is interesting, because when they compare price and the unbundling, it's almost like there needs to be a factor in there for the unbundling when you're comparing prices from even 10 years, 20 years ago. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone really do that and say, well, the average, you know, airfare in this market was X in, you know, 1998, and now it's this much now. But there's definitely a factor with the unbundling. I mean, I'm totally a fan of unbundling and a la carte. You know, I think it's great. Pay for what you need. But I think those comparisons on airfare aren't taking that into account. I hadn't thought about that until you said it. You know, I said, yeah, you know, you really, it's not the whole story. You know, you really to figure
out. We have Seth here with Data Man. We can get him to do it. Come on, Seth, give us some.
I can't run the numbers with the ancillaries that quickly. What I will say is, the DOT data covers airfare, and you're right. There is the split, and it, you know, what airfare includes has changed. Inflation adjusted over the past however many years, fares are down. With the unbundling, that probably backs away some of the, right, that offsets some of those savings. The best way to figure out what the impact of unbundling is, or what the actual real fare is to take airline data and just look at fare per passenger, mm-hmm. carried, rather than base fare plus unbundled. And right, like Spirit and Frontier purposely break, and Allegiant break out the ancillaries because they want to show how good they are at making that money, convince the, you know, investors that that's where the, you know, the real win is, and they get, you know, taxes on it and all these other fun things, excise taxes, still pay income tax. So there's that angle, but getting that data means scouring 10Qs and 10Ks, and I've never bothered to pull it together. I don't know. I'm sure someone out there has it, but I've just never bothered to do it or find it. So, yeah.
What's your take on the article, Seth?
Generally speaking, I think the talking about schedule padding is an interesting one. Personally, I agree that schedules are padded more than they used to be. I don't mind that, actually. My theory on that is, tell me when I'm going to leave and when I'm going to get there, and then stick to that, right? If I get there early, great. If I get there late and miss my connection or miss my dinner or miss my meeting, F you. And so, like, I wish you would have padded the schedule, and I would have planned to be late. Padding schedules costs the airlines money.
Yeah. So coming back from Sydney through DFW, my flight to Portland on American was delayed almost 2 hours. And when we got on the plane, the pilot made a funny comment. He said, we were about to push back, and he's like, Yeah, we've been here for the 2 hours. There was no plane, even though if you look around, there's plenty of planes. They didn't have a plane assigned. So they used a plane that was coming. It was scheduled to arrive when it did. And so they pushed our flight back. It's like, that's kind of asinine. You guys talk about AI and all this smart stuff. You had a plane on the ground. We could have left. You could have pushed another flight.
Yeah. So I'll give you the inverse of that. I got screwed on my JetBlue adventures this past weekend. One of my connections was a 38-minute sit in Tampa. It was unprotected connection. I knew it was risky when I booked it. I missed. And actually, to Michael's point, like, my pivot was to buy a walk-up cab fare on Spirit from Tampa to Fort Lauderdale. So it's the inverse of what we were just talking about. But $145, literally, I bought it in the air halfway to Tampa, 2.5 hours before departure. And I got it. And it's way better than the $100, $150 rental car and then driving for 4.5 hours. So, but anyways, the point I want to make about that is my flight, JFK to Tampa, I was one of the last people to board on purpose. I was traveling with just a light backpack that sits under the seat in front of me. So like, and spending as little time as I can on the planes, spending too much time on planes. And as I was walking on as one of the last people on the jet bridge, the pilots walk off. Like, they're walking upstream. I'm like, and I said, don't we need you to get to Tampa? And one of them looked over his shoulder, like, not us, and turned around and walked off. And I got on the plane, and I'm like the last person. I look at the flight deck, and it's empty. I was making sure like these weren't two just random guys deadheading or something. I look at the flight deck, and it's like, did we just lose our pilots? They're like, yeah, they got pulled. And so
went on another flight?
To another flight. So what happened is our pilots were a fresh pair. They were supposed to do a Tampa turn, down and back. The Puerto Plata Dominican Republic flight was running 2 hours delayed because of a mechanical. They had, and their pilots had started somewhere else and then were supposed to do the turn out of Puerto Plata, but with the delay, wouldn't be able to do the full turn. So a plane would have been stuck in the DR. They used our fresh pilots to get that full turn done. So they didn't have to cancel once they got to the DR, leave those people behind. And then the cascade effects of all that, plane out of position, later flights all screwed. We ended up delayed, but no one connects at Tampa, so it's okay. And like the people from Tampa coming back to JFK, the vast majority aren't connecting onward out of JFK, and the few that are probably had a big enough sit and they could deal with that 5 or 8 people instead of 165 stuck in the DR. So from every perspective of ops, I respect what they did. It was the right choice to make, move things around, keep things mostly moving. And yet still I'm pissed that I got screwed.
Yeah, but also it's not just being pissed that you got screwed. The problem with that is no matter how logical, even if you wanted to explain that to someone.
Yeah.
And obviously we hear that. And I, in the middle, when you started explaining, I was like, well, that sounds like a really smart operational decision.
Yeah.
You can't explain that to a client who, to somebody who they're like, I don't care about the operations. Like, I care about,
how am I going to explain to the couple next to me that was calling and canceling dinner reservations or trying to rebook dinner reservations that this was actually good for them because the people in Puerto Plata got home tonight.
Yeah.
Right. They don't care. They missed their dinner.
Well, there was a sinkhole at PBI. It must have been last year at some point. And my daughter, again, I have one child who's playing with delays. And so they had to divert everything out of PBI for like 2 hours. And it was JetBlue. And he's like, oopsie. Yeah, you'd think we'd go to Fort Lauderdale, but they're diverting us to Orlando. Because obviously, whatever number of planes they were diverting, you know, they couldn't send everybody to Fort Lauderdale, which is not really a pain, you know, for most people, whereas Orlando is a little bit of a pain. And that's
Did she hop on Brightline?
That was what we were planning to do, and I had the Brightline ticket all ready for her, but then the oopsie turned into, oh, PBI's reopened, we'll go back. So that's
sounds about right.
It sounded like the pilots had really good humor. I think it was a little bit, my daughter's like, oh, they think they're funny.
speaking of that stuff, Michael, you've got some travel bits to share with us, some news. What news do you want to share?
We're going to talk a little bit about Concierge Key.
Oh.
Or not. The only, this is an interesting question. Do you ever rank Delta 360 versus Concierge Key versus Global Services? Do you have an opinion about that from people about which provide truly exceptional service? I think that, or like, you know, who are better at providing exceptional service, because I think it's a very interesting conversation, obviously niche, but I do think it's sort of an interesting conversation.
I mean, we're gonna have a permanent GS with us soon enough in Foz, so he can give his GS opinion. But I've always thought of Concierge Key as being kind of like invite only. Is that wrong?
No, that is true. Yeah, they all.
I mean, they're all kind of invite only, but we know that GS is a little easier to get, right? Is that
well? GS you can do with Lifetime.
Yeah,
and I think Delta, in theory, with 360, you can. I mean, I don't know if it's like 5 million or 7 million with Lifetime. I don't think there is a Lifetime path to Concierge Key.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's a, you know, I always gauge things in things that, you know, my wife doesn't care about status. It's sort of crazy. Yep. And she's the one who travels much more than me. And I always follow, you know, always optimize what she does and keep track of things. But I would say the only status that she's ever had that she seems to care about is Concierge Key. That's
really,
yeah. And mostly it's not, you know, it's not things like upgrades and stuff like that. It's the got your back kind of like, what do you want us to do situations? Yeah. And we've had so many situations where they have, you know, now, of course, situations were usually caused by American Airlines operational problems. But setting that aside, you know, situations where they're basically willing to pretty much so do whatever they have to do to get you onto a flight. And two of the things that I found that are so interesting is their ability to book you onto. So if you have a flight operational issue, mechanical weather or whatever, we had one recently a couple months ago in Newark. The fact that they will book you and whoever else is in your PNR, they will book you into an oversold flight, which is really good for reaccommodating. Obviously, you only want to be booked into an oversold flight that has seats that can be assigned, which actually is an unusual phenomena, but quite a few times many oversold flights do have seats that can be assigned because of premium seats and people who don't choose seats. So that to me,
they charge for them. And actually, this is unbundling working in your favor, right?
Exactly. So there are, because to me, being booked into an oversold flight and not having a seat assignment is still a level of risk, because you don't have a seat assignment, right? And they're not going to kick someone out of the seat, you know, for anyone, rightly so. Like they shouldn't do that. So that's always been very impressive to me. But other things like, you know, just endorsements, you know, logical endorsements when you have issues, and things like your flight from Philly to London, you know, went to hell and has now been delayed 12 hours into the next day. And you were really flying from Philly to London and just spending 24 hours to see some friends before you went to your business trip in Frankfurt, and the kind of thing where you can say, it would be really great if, since I'm going to be stuck till tomorrow, I'm going to go visit some friends in North Jersey. And can you just put me on United Polaris from EWR to Frankfurt, because that's where I need to go? And they say, sure. So that's, you know, so now you've got a situation where it's not even flights, you know, you're changing, and not co-terminals, you know, you're changing that. And that to me has been really, really impressive. Just that level of service and support. Oh yeah. All the other stuff is really nice, which my wife like does not care about at all. Things like, you know, if you tell them at the lounge in Miami, they will always take you in a car on the tarmac to the plane, and you can board via the air bridges if you want to. You know, of course, to me, that's really cool. She thinks you lose steps, you know, by not walking to the gate.
Here's something I didn't realize, Michael, about American flagship dining. So I was at DFW. Flagship dining is only usable by AA first class passengers, or whatever business plus is, whatever class that is, not anyone in One World on a first class ticket. Like if you're on an international F ticket on another One World carrier, you do not get flagship dining.
And that has come up many times with people flying JAL from Dallas Fort Worth to Tokyo, but they actually changed it. There is an exception, and they've changed, and it was a definite change. They made an exception for British Airways first class in Miami, which is interesting because it wasn't. And this is my best talking my way into the lounge. I had a flight back home to London, and it was from Fort Lauderdale to Fort Lauderdale to Dallas, Dallas to London. Dallas to London was in flagship first, and everything went to hell. So I went from Fort Lauderdale. So I got endorsed over to British Airways first class from from Miami to London. And of course, I asked for access to the lounge. And they're like, well, you can't. This is only for American Airlines flagship. I'm like, I was on American Airlines flagship first from Dallas to London. But you guys messed up the flights. And I actually talked. I got them to make the exact. I said, well, logically, I have access. I was going to have access in Dallas. So, you know, wouldn't it only make sense? But you're absolutely right about that. And it's very one of the things that people are saying is what's going to happen
when you know, now
there won't be first. So there's only there'll be the business plus. The other way you can get it is through one of your choice rewards. So there is a choice reward for flagship dining, which is good for two people. And what's cool about that award is if it's really, really valuable, and if you give it to somebody and they don't have access to the flagship lounge to begin with, because that obviously gets you into the flagship lounge and it gets you the flagship dining. And in the system, I think the best is actually Dallas, because there's hardly ever anyone in there in the service.
It was empty.
It's an amazing. This is what so I love about the inconsistencies of airlines. Like some things American does is they've done such a good job with. And with the flagship, I mean, I love that flagship lounge in Dallas because they have the Toto toilets in the.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say they love a lounge because of the toilets, but I'm.
Oh, no. Toilet. You've got to talk. You've got airline experience, but you've got toilet experience.
And. Toilex, Seth, that's your new blog. Toilex.arrow.
I don't know who got that approved. Like, and they have, and it's a big men's room, like 20, you know,
oh, yeah.
10 stalls or something. I don't know who got them to approve them spending that kind of money on something like that. Where, I mean, you talk about like cost savings, like that is definitely not something you would do in North America, you know, in a,
it is their gateway to Asia.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, right. To give American credit, right, the one thing they do really well is premium, and right, they are leaps and bounds ahead of both United and Delta in that regards, and it's little things like they will not put a kiosk at the premium check-in counter, right? Like whereas United, like they claim to be a premium airline, but they're forcing everyone to automation, even to get into the lounge now. They don't want to talk to you, even if there's someone sitting there.
Yeah,
and United's kind of missing the boat on well. Premium passengers, like I understand to automate a lot of the stuff for the lower end, but your premium passengers expect a premium experience.
I agree with that, Seth, or Foz. Yeah. I agree with that totally, because if it doesn't feel premium to just go hit a button on a kiosk.
I will say there is a subset of people that not having to deal with a human and it just working is the premium experience. I think there's probably an age divide that all of us are on one side of.
And that's okay. You can make an option. You don't have to make it mandatory, but... Right. Like in the case of American, if you don't want to talk to me, if you don't want to use a machine, you can, but you're not being forced to.
Yeah. I will say just relative to the rebookings and the oversold flight thing, Global Services theoretically does that as well onto United, at least on United Metal. The one brief time I had Global Services and had need to use that, they didn't want to. They're like, oh, sorry, Mr. Miller. Like my flight was canceled. It was weather. I was trying to fly from Dulles back up to New York. And it was what it was and fine. And I called in, I'm like, aren't you supposed to put me on the next available, like on the next scheduled flight? And they're like, oh, well, I have to call the gate, but let me see what I can do. And I was like, yes, go ahead. They finally did. She's like, well, you have to pick which one. I'm like, which flight's going to go? And we talked it over. Like, because I was willing to go to LaGuardia, Newark, or JFK. She's like, well, we all know JFK is not going to fly. Is that a Dulles? And she was right. That one canceled first. But I think, I don't remember which one I picked, but whichever one it was, like that one then also canceled. And there were some other people hanging out around and I ended up getting a hotel room, actually someone else's like mattress run hotel room that they weren't sleeping in. I took the key card. So it was fine. Actually went to Ed's house and had dinner that night. But
you see, this is a win.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, your point is very clear. American will only book you onto an oversold on American Metal. That is for sure. And when they endorse to United, it's not a given. Even if there are seats available for sale, there's something there about what they can do. So it's not like a guarantee, you know, which I think makes sense. Or I think part of it has to be, especially with all the stuff with Newark, is like United, like, no, we're not, like, we've got two seats left on this flight or one, and we're not going to let you endorse onto this flight.
We're saving that for our own mess, not yours.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a very reasonable kind of situation. But what you were saying about, you know, luxury and experience and all of that and interaction with
with people and speaking to people, you know, whether it's at the airport or in phone numbers. I still think there is a lot to be said of when you need something, that if you are of the status or anyone, when you need something, sometimes talking to someone is a much better situation. Like, I think the gates of hell is calling Xfinity. Thank goodness I don't deal with them. I'm sorry if Xfinity is a sponsor.
Do we look like we're sponsored by Xfinity?
No. I'm totally joking. But I used to say I would pay more money per month to be given a phone number where when I have a problem, I could actually call and get a human and not have to go through the merry-go-round of things. And I always think of that as service, especially today, like with the AI chatbots and the menus and the text queues and all of that. You know, there are just a few times, you know, and I always look at it, I'm like, who are these people calling Xfinity that they have to guard the agents that closely? Like, nobody wants to call these people. Like, nobody.
Well, there's only three people, though. The call center's three people. And so
some of that, you know, when you really, and I always am like, but I only call like once a year every 14 months. Why are you putting me through this? Of course I really need to speak to an agent. I don't want to do this telephone call. And that's a...
It's very true. If I could skip the, if I could bypass the United line, I would on calls. Real quick, Michael, do you want to talk quickly about Zorkfest at all?
Sure. We do a casino and travel loyalty conference every year. Well, it's almost every year. It's not guaranteed to be every year, and it's exhausting as I become older. But Seth's been there. Seth was at number one. And it's, the website is zorkfest.com, has lots of information, you know, lots of information about it, but it is a crossover between casino and travel loyalty, though I would say it's still 70%. Travel loyalty. And we do a lot of cool stuff. This year, actually, we're doing some new things like pre-sessions for those who've never gone to a conference like that beforehand, which are optional, which I think is pretty cool. And then in addition to regular sessions of listening to people speak and socializing, we came up with the concept of Craps and Blackjack Labs last year, where we have like small group learning from some experts, you know, people who are intimidated by those games or want more information. And we're doing the same thing with Miles and Points this year. So we're going to have like these lab sessions, which are like set up a table, like for like aspirational redemptions, and you can sort of work on a lab session, maybe work with some tools and things like that. So we're always trying to do different things, and it's at a great resort. And we're also leaning in a little bit more to some master classes. And this year we're going to have a casino comp master class, and it's going to also include video poker. And what I like to say to Miles and Points people is, because the biggest thing I always get is like, but I don't want to gamble. I hate gambling. I'm like, I've heard all of this. I said, but you have to look at it like some things like earning tier points and doing that. Things like earning tier points during a 10 times tier multiplier is a conduit to getting status, you know, especially since a lot of things like Caesar status are tough to get. So sometimes learning to gamble properly with video poker and understanding the odds and understanding all of that can be a tool to gain casino status for actually less money than having to do crazy amounts of spend on a Caesar's credit card. Mm-hmm. And I've often say to people, some of this stuff, you know, if you want to get free cruises and get in on the casino side, it's just like, you know, nobody likes to buy gift cards and do that kind of thing. You don't enjoy it. It's a tool to get miles and to manufacture spend or whatever. So, you know, sometimes you have to look at some of these things as a tool to, you know, achieve things to get status. And yeah, it's a different way, because I don't advocate, you know, if you like gambling, you should learn to gamble better and learn how the casino loyalty programs work. But I'm not looking to turn people into gamblers. I'm just looking to turn, you know, looking for people to understand things. And also, you know, casino loyalty and risk analysis and stuff also really helps you with understanding travel loyalty. So that kind of thing is really cool.
Cool. Zorkfest.com, December 5th through 7th, Vegas. Check it out. Thanks, Michael. Last topic for the main show. Listeners, we're going to suggest you go listen to another podcast. Amazing. It's amazing. It is the Journey is the Reward podcast. We'll put a link in the show notes. Foz is the special guest of this episode that we're linking to, because Foz is about to hit 4 million miles. I think we have a date, right, Foz? I mean, you don't have to say the date on here, but we have a date coming up.
We have a tentative date. Yes.
Yeah. So,
he's talking more. He's now talked about more about this effort on another podcast than he has on ours. I'm feeling a little left out.
But so, do you have a number?
isn't that like from Up in the Air? Do you have a number in mind? No, I'll know when I get there.
So Foz, you did this podcast. Anything you want to say? I thought it was a great episode. But anything you want to tell our listeners?
I mean, it's a conversation around whether or not, in hindsight, I would do it again, among other things. But just the journey to 4 million. And Brian, one of the co-hosts of it, is I think he just hit 3 or is on his path to 3. And we were talking about whether or not it's worth it.
It's awesome.
I vote no.
let's ask Foz in a month. All right.
I would say if it brings you happiness, it's worth it.
Are you happy, Foz?
It's more like closure.
Marin. All right. Well, thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode. Michael, thank you for coming on. Michael from travelsorg.com. We will talk to our Patreon subscribers in the bonus topics, which is going to include some stuff about Southwest, some stuff about Boeing, some stuff about Air India and Ethiopia. So stick around for that for our Patreon subscribers. We'll talk to you in the next one. Happy travels.
Take care.
Bob and I talked over each other and even said the same thing.
Oh, well.